fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Yeah, I just had to listen a little bit more of it today. Just something about that song. That song was literally way back in the 60s, and that's Elvin Bishop. But if you listen close to the fiddle playing, you might recognize the guy on the fiddle. That's actually Charlie Daniels, playing the fiddle for Elvin Bishop back then before he got famous on his own. That's an old song. Anyway, getting back into the wide world, yes, it's Fish and Frank, the Blind Tarpon, Mr. Roberts there across from me, and we have Captain Morris Campbell, and then we have RJ in the control studio doing his magic and other things that RJ does. You know, we're never really sure what that is, but we know it is definitely something important. At least it seems that way. Anyway, lots of good news out there. There's absolutely no red tide.
No red tide.
No red tide. I love it.
At all, from like Sarasota down to Collier, everything's clear and green. A little bit showing up off of the Coosahatchee. And thank goodness, because I went on fishandfranks.com, clicked the weather and tide button, and then I went down to the Peace River, and you look at the water flow, and right now we got 657 cubic feet a second. That's just not enough to keep the red tide out of the harbor. We need to have over 800 cubic feet per second to keep the red tide out of the harbor. That's the average. And we're actually a little below average now on the water level. It's about 3.5 feet in Arcadia, which means not enough water to protect us. Luckily, for the moment, there's no red tide. But that can come and go, and that's why everybody jumps up now and gets all excited about it. What I want to know is, why don't they test? Why isn't one of these laboratories putting in a saltwater pool, add red tide to it, and then put, like, this type of fertilizer in it? Did it make it grow? Did it make it die? Put in this other type of algae with it, like this sawdust gold algae, and see what that does with it. Put the black algae in with it. See what that does with it. Why isn't somebody actually finding out what's going on? I think the big problem, the huge problem with red tide, is we got people being paid to study red tide every year. They're not paid to get rid of it. They're not paid to test with it. They're just paid to go out and look and go, oh, gee, there's red tide, or oh, gee, there's not red tide. Mm-hmm. Why are we giving them, it's somewhere between $1 and $3 million a year to these groups? It's just literally amazing to me that this is going on. I can't figure out why. Let's actually pay somebody to do some studies and see, does fertilizer react with it or doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Big controversies. They say, some people say it does, some people say it doesn't. But one thing we do know is, if you want to catch a 10-pound bass, how many people out there have been bass fishing and they go out and they catch 3-pound bass and 2-pound and 5-pound and they get a 6 or a 7? You really want to catch a 10-pounder? We have the captain for you. Morris Campbell, now I'm going to say this number a couple of times, 941-276-4478. Now, if you want to go out and catch that 10-pound bass, Morris is your best bet. Now, Morris, how's the bass fishing locally here?
Locally, it's fine. I mean, it's tremendous. It's not what we're doing, you know, in some of the lakes over in the north central part of the state, but you can locally catch a big bass on occasion, but
I would say a big bass locally nowadays is what, 7 pounds?
To 7 pounds is most people, you know, a lot of the newspapers and all, you'll see guys with 7-8 pound bass, you know, in the picture, and it's more like a 5 pound bass in the picture, or a 4 pounder.
Yeah, I've looked at so many bass over the years, I can pretty much look at a picture and tell a person what it really is. I don't often have the heart to tell them what the real weight is.
Yeah.
They say, oh, look at my 8-pound, 9-pound bass.
I'm nice
looking
bass.
At a solid 7. and giving it a little bit. Yeah. And, but, you know, if they're happy, they're happy. But you've been, how many over 10 did you get this week?
We caught one over 10 Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We had a 9-3, we had a 10-6, and we had a 8-15 were our three biggest bass for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. But we caught over 30 bass each day, and probably over half of those were over 5 pounds.
All right. Now, if you're out and you're shiner fishing, what type of float and hook do you like to use?
I'm using the Fish and Frank Special. You know, it's just a fluorescent cork with a slit all the way through it, and it's got two little stoppers in it, and that's what I'm using. And nothing fancy, no leaders, nothing like that. I'm using a 5-6-aught Kale hook, and using wild shiners, which it's critical to use the wild shiners for the really big bass. And the size shiners that I'm fishing with are between 9 and 14, 15 inches long.
It's like ladyfish size.
Right.
It really is.
Pretty significant.
Well, it eliminates the small bass from the equation.
And that's what people don't get. You can catch a big fish on a small bait, but if your bait is big enough, you're not going to catch a small fish with it. They just can't do it, so they, you know, it's another fish for them. It's not food source. And that's why when they say big bait, big fish, that's true if your bait's big enough, because you eliminate the small ones, not because the big fish won't eat a small bait. It's just an elimination of the smaller fish out of that. Now, if you were going to pick a lure or a worm or plastic or hard bait for around here right now, what would you go with, Morris?
Just around here right now, I would choose a small plastic worm in about 6 to 7 inches. Your culprit, your gamblers, in a June bug or a black blue tail. For this specific area, a lot of our water is dark or greenish color, and those two colors work perfectly in those. You can rig those multiple ways. You can fish them from the surface all the way down to the deepest bottom.
So what
depth
would be your choice right now, knowing, I mean, we did have a cool front. It kind of, it didn't drop the temperature at all.
It was a tease, wasn't it?
But it did drop the humidity quite a bit. So it is a little more comfortable out there. It's hotter than Dickens, but the humidity is better. Now, knowing everything about this, would you go bottom, mid, or top?
I would still fish it with a lightweight, which would allow me to swim the bait either close to the surface, medium depth, or, you know, stop.
So you're going to be very non-committal. I mean, you're not making a call on this.
Yeah, well, some days you're going to catch them on top, and, you know, we're still in that pattern where the bass really want to stay out of the direct sunlight, because it hit 90 degrees a couple days this week. So they, you know, in the middle of the day, they're going to be deeper, whereas in
morning and evening,
they're going to be closer to the surface.
Okay. So I guess that's why you're varying it during the time of day. So the more middle of the day you are, the more you want to fish the bottom, darker areas. Now, are you just going to swim it close to the bottom, or you think hopping that worm would be the best way?
I really like to just pull the worm just maybe 6 or 8 inches at a time, let it sit, and let the bass look at it, you know, because most of these worms, the tail will float and flutter, and when you get ready to move it again, a lot of times they'll just whack it, or a lot of times it'll sit stationary on the bottom and get hit.
Yeah, I do that a lot. I'm casting out, just letting it fall to the bottom, and then as long as I can stand it, I'll let it sit there kind of on its own.
And a lot of times you get that strike on the on the fall when you throw it out, that worm's sinking to the bottom slowly, and you'll feel a twitch go.
The best way to do it is literally just to watch your line.
Yeah.
As that line's going down in the water, you can see the line going below the surface as it comes to you. And once that stops, it's actually on the bottom. And then you're looking for side to side or the line going away from you to tell if you have a strike. Now, one thing about a 10, 12-pound bass, you would think when it you've got a float out there, you got the shiner below it, you would think that when that fish hits, it just crushes it, the bobber goes straight down. Now, you were fishing a guy from Maine the other day.
Mm-hmm.
What happened there?
Well, you know, we're fishing along a big mat of floating hyacinths, and His cork did nothing other than just stand straight up. Never moved, never did anything, just stood straight up and started. It looked like the wind was pulling away, and I knew that that was a fish bite. I knew he had a bass on, and when he went to set the hook, he just kind of nonchalantly set the hook because he didn't really believe me, and when he did, he had 11, 12-pound bass on the other end of the line, and it jumped off and threw his hook and shiner out because he didn't put the hook into the bass.
There's one thing about bass that's a lot different than if you're now used to fishing in Shaw Harbor, the Myakka River, Peace River, along the intercoastal, you really slow down your hook set. You know, you're not whipping that rod back. You're not really jerking it. You give a good little tug, but that's a hook set. But when you're dealing with a bass, big shiner, big bait,
big hook,
plastics, big hooks, you've actually got to put some effort into that.
Yeah, because his mouth is bony, much, much bonier than, say, a snook or a trout or redfish even. And, you know, we're using 5- and 6-aught hooks, which you wouldn't even consider using that, you know, snook and redfishing. So when you set the hook on it, you need to get completely tied on them and make the rod do the work. The rod is your leverage, and you sweep it to the right or the left, but never straight up.
And now, why don't you sweep straight up?
Well, the only occasion that we would even call for that is when the fish is swimming right to the boat and he's directly below you when you set the hook. Otherwise, you sweep right or left because a kale hook does not hook the fish properly when you set the hook in the traditional manner.
It's because of the style of hook.
The style
now,
of the hook.
If you have a standard J hook or worm hook or something, you can set
it any way you
motion.
Like.
But with a kale hook, a side sweep to one side or the other, same amount of arc. If, say, your rod starts at 10 o'clock and you're going back to about 1 overhand, you still want a sidearm that hooks that from 10 o'clock to 1 on a sidearm.
Correct. And the most important aspect of any hook set is that it occur when there's no slack in the line. I mean, it doesn't matter what you're fishing for. If you set the hook on slack line, you have basically done nothing.
Well, not only that, you don't do anything, but if you do connect at the very end of the hook set, so you've got some slack in the line, you started at, say, 9:30, you're going all the way back to 1 o'clock, and what happens is it's kind of like a jerk at the end of it. You're snatching it away.
Mm-hmm.
It's real quick. It's real bam. And it will literally just pop it right out of the fish. You'll either rip it out or pop it out. You're not going to get that good hook set where when the line's tight, it's a steady pull and it inserts it. Where a snapping action where you have slack line and then you just hit it right at the end, it just usually doesn't work.
And that's one of the hardest things to get a client out of a habit of doing that. And I don't know where they get that. Maybe they see it on TV or something, but...
Well, you watch TV and these guys, what people don't realize is that when you're watching a bass fishing show or a saltwater show and you see the guy with the big hook set, now watch very closely on that TV show. Does it show the guy with a hook set and then there's kind of a little break and you see him landing the fish, or do they do the hook set and the camera moves over and you see the fish coming in? The reason I say that is that little cut in there, while you're out fishing doing a fishing show, and I had 4 years of my own show, I've been on many, many others, and what you're seeing is at the end of the day, they do hook sets. They have a camera boat out there, and the cameraman puts his foot on the line, and the guy starts to reel and pretends to set the hook. Or they put literally a bucket out in the water.
5-gallon bucket.
And now you're reeling up to it, and they catch up to the bucket. You see this big hook set. Watch the sky, watch sweat marks, and then watch if there's any kind of break in the film. If there's a little cut, that hook set might have been done hours later. And it was done on a bucket or with somebody's foot on the line. That's the reality of fishing shows, because let's face it, you're not going to run the cameras for 10 hours nonstop. You're going to go, oh, something's going on. Turn the camera on, start going. And that's why they do the hook sets at the end of the day. Okay, we caught, you know, 10 fish. They do 15, 20 hook sets, see which one they get the best angle on. It looks like the way the guy was doing that. But hook sets are usually always done from low down with the sky in the background. very seldom do you see a hook set with a lot of background in it, because the background changed from the fish to the hook set.
That's right.
So, little tidbit for you there. Robert, on a different note, bonnethead sharks. Is this something that, are they coming back now?
Yeah, this is kind of the time of year when you start to expect to see them, but it's like they all of a sudden moved in great numbers. You know, there's been some good reports in Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, some on Cape Hayes, but all along the intercoastal throughout the backside of Boca Grande. You know, so they've been a lot of miscellaneous reports, which says they're going to start to move into the east side a little bit more. You should start seeing them on the flats, especially at the water clearing up.
So for the bonnethead sharks, is there any kind of special rig? I know what I use, and it's pretty simple. Anything special you like for bonnets?
No, that's pretty much, your rig is pretty fail-safe. I mean, a bobber and a hook, like almost like you're trout fishing with a shrimp.
Literally, I use the same as when I'm trout fishing. Mm-hmm. I have a shrimp. I use an octopus hook or a Kaylee hook. If I'm under a bobber, I prefer to use the Kaylee hook, either the Eagle Claw or the Mustad 37-140 or 37-141. I like those Kaylee hooks under the bobbers because it's such an amazing hook set.
They work.
And all you got to do is literally just reel forward and then tighten the line up, and you've got your shark on. And it's a live shrimp, or even frozen. Excuse me, frozen shrimp. Both those are just killer on bonnethead.
They prefer shrimp.
They would rather eat a shrimp than anything else.
Absolutely. You know, it's, sharks are funny because they're opportunistic feeders, but some are more known for feeding on fish, and some are more for feeding on crustaceans. And bonnethead, 90% of the time, that's what you're going to catch them on. Very seldom do you catch them on anything but either a shrimp or a crab.
Yeah. You know what I'm going to try on them is fish bites.
Oh, yeah.
I want to try that shrimp-flavored fish bites. Now, fish bites came out with a new lure, and I literally bought every fish bite available. The lures, the triangles, the strips. I said, I want a box of everything. Literally, I wanted everything they make, because it's, I would say it's the not being seen. I mean, fish bites are not a big seller on the west coast of Florida. On the east coast, I mean, literally from St. Augustine, maybe down to Fort Lauderdale, all the way up to Maine, fish bites, it's like the number one thing. It's amazing. Right. But on this coast of Florida, people outside of our store, very few people sell them. And I think it's an amazing bait. And I like the new lures. What are they called?
Fight Club, I think.
Fight Club.
Yeah, why didn't they call it Bite Club? You know, it would have sounded like Fight Club, really?
Sounds like an MMA shrimp, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's
like... Well, not only that, but it's called Fish Bites. Why not go with Bite Club?
Yeah, it just seemed to me. But that's why I don't get paid all the money these marketing people get paid, right. Because they can say something stupid and make a ton of money.
But the fish bites, you're absolutely right on that. That works everywhere. Salt water, fresh, they work in fresh water. The bonnethead sharks will bite those. I've actually caught bonnetheads on fish bites.
And I think it's that new, they got the paddle tail, they got the curl tail, they've got all these different things. You use them with a hook or a jig head, and you can use it like dead bait, you can use it as a swimming lure, or you can just let it, okay, I'm tired of reeling, just let it go to the bottom and sit there.
Catch redfish, we catch bonefish on the things, just let them sit on the bottom.
Yeah, it's a good quality bait, made in St. Augustine. They're made right here in Florida. I think the closest competitor is Gulp.
Definitely.
I mean, Gulp and fish bites are kind of head-to-head, but Gulp has been outselling everything. But after the years of people using Gulp, they still catch good fish. But it's not like it was a couple years ago. I would still say Gulp 5 years ago was like a 90-95% chance of you were going to catch fish. And nowadays, it's more 60% chance.
Yeah, the bass in my lake do not like Gulp.
Really?
They will come up to a Gulp worm and swimming, and they'll come up, track up to it and stop and look at it and smell it. I know what they're doing. They're smelling it like a snook does, too, to your lure sometime. And then he'll just turn away from it. The yeah. action attracts them, but they don't commit because it doesn't. They don't like that smell.
I like the shrimp flavored gulp for bluegills, panfish. Yeah. I haven't caught a bass with one, but I've caught the heck out of panfish and sunfish with the shrimp flavor.
They make an earthworm too that yeah. I have just crushed the bluegill and shellcrackers in my lake with.
Yeah, I'm gonna. I don't know if we got all the freshwater stuff. I think we're still waiting on the freshwater one.
Right.
But that works, and they also make a small one. Gulp makes a small minnow, and it
fish
is killer.
Fish minnows
it's,
or gulp?
It's a gulp minnow, the gulp and minnow. It's killer on crappie.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get some more of those.
But fish bites, oh, my gosh, what a great bait.
Right now, if you come into the store, you can see the expansion, but you got a lot of blank walls. We're still in the process of putting up new pegboard and pegboard walls. We're moving stuff from one area to another. Trying to figure out how we're going to do this. We want a soft plastic room, a hard bait room, a combo room, a tools section. We got a offshore section we get started. We got rods. We got tackle box, cast net section. We've got all kinds of stuff. But it's a little discombobulated yet. But you can kind of come in and get a feel for coming attractions, if you will. It's open. You can walk around through there. But in the next week or two, you'll actually see... I would say within the next month, we'll actually have it merchandised.
Yeah, it's just a little bit of a process because, I mean, we doubled the space, essentially. You know, so rearranging everything and then getting everything reorganized, it's a pretty serious
challenge.
Undertaking.
We've looks terrific.
Actually put 60 sheets of pegboard in. That's a lot of pegboard. They're 4x8 sheets. I bought 60 sheets, so I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's okay. We're not going to worry about people talking out there. No one wants to hear what I got to say anyway. All right, Morris, this is one for you. One of your jobs is based out of Gasparilla, Boca Raton. What's going on out there?
Clean water, bait fish everywhere. There are herds of thread herrings and white bait, small, medium, large. The birds are going crazy in them. I saw a school of Spanish mackerel in Little Gasparilla Pass just going crazy, skyrocketing in these baits. The people are actually going out and catching bait again and fishing again and catching redfish and trout, and there's plenty of snook, regardless of what they say that, you know, we lost all our snook. There are plenty of snook. Plenty
of
snook.
Well, we know FWC lied when they did the closure. I'm 98% sure FWC did a political decision when they closed snook and redfish. They had nothing to go by except it's an election year and they wanted to say this politician was doing something good because you can't find the stock assessment numbers. They're not available.
You mean like red snapper and triggerfish and amberjack?
And the manatees.
Yes,
exactly. FWC is usually one of my favorite groups and organizations. I'm very let down, very distressed, because now they went political again. And it's just, when you make political decisions, I had to lay off 4 people. I cut one of the 5 I had hired, all 4. One of them is working a couple hours a week as a fill-in. The rest of them lost their jobs. We could lose more jobs because of a political decision. Well, what kind of good politics does that make when people are losing their jobs? That's just as plain and simple. Good God, we, you know, bunch of donkeys. All right, anyway, Robert, what is the number one fish all around the harbor right now? What's your best bet?
Redfish, the rare and elusive redfish.
Yeah.
Oh, the one we don't have any of.
Exactly. There's none left. I mean, they're catching them all over the place. Basically, anywhere in the bushes, East Wall, West Wall, Intercoastal, Pine Island, Lemon Bay, just good numbers of them. You're catching singles and doubles under the bushes. There's a handful of schools scattered out there. Most people aren't talking about the schools because they're just not super heavy or in obvious spots from what I've been told. But there's enough fish under the bushes. Just work them. Crabs, if you can get them, are by far the number one bait of choice for them, but larger shrimp and pinfish, both live and dead, are working extremely well on them. Just still fish. Cast up under the bush. Let it sit for a couple minutes. Let those fish try to find their way through the mangroves and find their way out to where they can follow that scent trail.
Here's going to be the one big thing. You're going to fish very differently on the east side of Charlotte Harbor right now than the west side. Next time you look at a map of Charlotte Harbor and you're looking at it, let's say it goes north and south, what I would like you to do is look at the top. You're going to see the mouth of the Peace River on the top right, and right on the top left, you're going to see the mouth of the Myakka River. Now, both those rivers, although slowly, are still flowing fresh water out. Our fresh water's brown. It's colored by the
tannins
from the leaves and the plants. It turns it brown. So at this time of year, we have this amazing phenomenon, and it's just really cool. What you see is the water on the outgoing tide coming down the west side. That half of the harbor is brown. Now, as the tide turns and comes in, that clear salt water coming out of the Gulf, and it's nice and pretty and clear right now, comes in through Boca Grande, Gasparilla, Captiva, and goes around and goes over and hits the east side of the harbor right around Burnt Store Marina. Now, what's happening below that is there's water coming in from Ponderosa Pass, Redfish. All these lower passes are bringing water in as well. So that water, really very little, if any of it, goes south towards Mont Lachey. The vast bulk of it, 70-80% of it, goes north along the east side of the harbor. If the tide is long enough, let's say it's a 10-hour tide, it's going to go up, hit Punta Gorda, the wide point. Punta Gorda in Spanish means wide point. One letter different, and we could have had a oversized prostitute. But when it hits Punta Gorda and it goes over and ends up, it will end up at the Myakka River. And you can literally trace the route on how it goes. But on the west side, it's not getting that clear water. That still has the brown water. Some of it gets diluted and as the tide goes in and out. But it literally, the west side of the harbor stays brown for about 2 months longer than the east side of the harbor. So now on the brown water on the west side, you're going to fish slower. You can be closer to the mangroves, closer to your fish. They're not going to see you. But you want your bait to set more. Now on the east side of the harbor, time to dig out some longer rods. You've got to be back further from the fish so they don't see the boat. The calmer it is, the clearer the water is, the farther away you have to be not to spook those fish. So east side, you can fish a little faster. The water's just a little bit cooler. West side, the water's a little warmer. Brown water heats up faster than clear water. So you've got a duality of fishing right now between one side of the harbor and the other. Completely different set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. RJ, are you a big clear water, brown water guy? Which one do you prefer?
I like the clear water just because you can see what's going on. And, a strike is exciting, but to see the fish head towards what you're doing is even more exciting. So, yeah, I like the clear water. And
kind of like topwater fishing. You get to see the head, feel the head. It's all there.
Right, especially since you can't keep anything anymore, All you're going to do is get the enjoyment of the hit and reeling them in and letting them go.
Now, I will say, you can keep everything right now except snook and redfish. All the other seasons are open on the fish, but just not snook and redfish. So, but they are the top two reasons people come down here. Number three being tarpon, number four being shark. But redfish, snook,
I agree with that.
Tarpon, shark, and are the top biggies. And then number five would be sea trout, and then the rest of them all fall into the bottom of that.
For the inshore part of it, and then for the offshore part of it, it's a little different ball game.
Yeah, but Charlotte Harbor inside.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, speaking of just going outside for a minute, how's the snapper fishing out there? Is there a good dinner to be had?
Yeah, the snapper fishing has been really good.
It will get better. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the drawback is that the wind's been blowing out of the east. So a lot of people haven't been running out real far, but the weird part is that the majority of the reports that I've gotten in this past few days have all been the best snapper and grunt bite has been that 15 to 20 mile mark instead of that 10 to 15 mark. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they've moved out a little bit further.
Well, it could have been we had all that red tide, and when the hurricane was coming by, when Michael was coming by, it mixed it up, got a little bit, could have pushed those fish out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple reasons, absolutely. I mean, between red tide and underwater movement, burying and unburying some of the structures out there, that could change a lot of different things going on, too.
Yeah, we had some but, pretty big seas out there.
So, yeah. And it's starting to lay down now, but it's still that easterly wind. First 4 or 5 miles is going to be really calm, but then it starts to get pretty sporty after that.
Sucker wind.
Yeah, sucker wind.
Yeah, that's what they call it.
Sucker, you fell for that one.
Yeah, it was calm on the way out, but man, it's rough one. Look how rough it is when we turn around to put the anchor out. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I like that. That's pretty good. But you know,
sucker, you fell for it.
You got the mangrove snapper and the lane snapper are still doing real good. A lot of the porgies and the grunts are starting to pick up out there. Well, still doing well out there. The weird part is I haven't heard of any permit this past week or cobia, which they should still be out there. I think they're just moving around a lot, trying to get relocated and
resituated. Well, we had a couple reports of schools of cobia in the harbor where you had 6 to 12 fish in a bunch going through the harbor.
Yeah, right. I haven't heard of any of that. So
that usually starts when we get those the first real cold front and the water temperatures drop a few degrees. That's when they
this
start.
This was a come. Fake cold front, but it
yeah, it was a tease as, it was, at best. Yeah,
not good.
It was just stretching its legs.
Yeah,
but I mean, you know, I would take advantage of the nice weather out there. You know, if the wind lays down a little bit, definitely be prepared for a lot of stuff because you know we're talking about some of the Spanish mackerel activity going on out there.
Oh, it's October.
You know, we got probably several more weeks.
Okay, where are the Spanish mackerel?
From Boca Grande Pass going north, they're doing good, but from Stump Pass up to Venice, really good. I mean, hearing some phenomenal reports up there around Venice, Manasota Key area, anywhere from a mile offshore to about 3 miles offshore, and even the Venice Pier and the jetties up there, they've been doing really good the last several days.
There was a really nice school of Spanish Macs inside Gasparilla Pass, little Gasparilla Island, Gasparilla Pass. They were working the bait, skyrocketing. There were multiples.
Here's the question. RJ, favorite Spanish mackerel lure?
Anything silver.
As long as it's cheap, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and metal.
So. Cheap metal and silver. That's our choice.
Stay away from plastic. Away from rubber.
Robert, number one Spanish mackerel lure.
A bottle cap with a hook in it.
That's very true.
Come on. Give me a Spanish mackerel lure.
Gotcha
plug.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Now, you with the smaller version, or you like the longer standard
both.
One?
I'm impartial, to be honest with you. I cast them all because they work. You know, one guy's got a favorite color or favorite length. I know they're going to
eat silver.
It. I want that picky.
I'm not big on the gold ones.
I'm not as big on the gold ones either, but I still got enough confidence in them that I can still catch fish on them, so I'm not too worried about it. But normally speaking, I'm always going to stick with the silvers.
The gotchas. So.
Yeah.
All right. Captain Morris Campbell.
For me, nothing beats a bucktail jig. White or green or, you know, a little bit of silver in it. Just a plain old bucktail jig. Catch the crap out of it.
VMC makes that hot skirt jig.
Yes.
It's that little bucktail thing that is literally that VMC hot skirt. It's a little bucktail. It's been going crazy and everything. We've sold so many of these things in the sizes we've carried. I bought every size and every color VMC had yesterday. I ordered everything. I mean, we're going to have this huge display of hot skirts because it's a simple, inexpensive bucktail jig that works. It catches fish.
Oh, gosh.
It's got a halfway decent paint job on it. You know, you got the whites and blues and blacks and whites and all this kind of stuff with the jig head and the matching skirt. But it's inexpensive, and they catch fish.
And it's got a great hook on it. It's not going to straighten out or any of that stuff.
Decent little hook. I'm not going to say great. I'm going to go with decent. I think it's a reasonably priced, reasonably strong, reasonably good-looking jig from VMC. It's called Hot Skirts. Now, mind you, it's probably going to be a week to 2 weeks before we get the displays up. I would say 2 weeks from now. So when you come in, I've got like 8 different ones, but in a little while, we're looking at a massive wall of hot skirts. This has been coming on, coming on, coming on. And you know what might be interesting? That little curl tail of the Fight Club fish bite on the back of a hot skirt, like a three ace.
Yep.
Good idea, bad idea, Robert?
I won't do it.
You won't do it?
Nope. I don't need to for a Spanish mackerel.
No, I just meant in general.
In general, sure.
In general. You're right. We were talking about Spanish mackerel. Yeah, you squirreled on Why would you bother? The hot skirt's going to catch as many as you need. The gotcha, the shiny, flashy silver.
Now, you can combine those, because one of my favorite things to do when we were trolling for Spanish mackerel, and we caught a gazillion of them, I would take a little three-way swivel. I would run a number one or a double O reflecto spoon.
Clark spoon.
Yeah.
Or reflecto.
Yeah, yeah. And I would run it on a little piece of lighter wire, and then below that, on the bottom dropper, I would run a bucktail jig and just slow troll it and catch two at a time.
Now, what Morris is talking about is you take a three-way swivel. On one of the loops is for your line. You tie your fishing line to it. On the next loop, you want to take and put a small, lightweight spoon. Not a Johnson Sprite, not a Gator. It's either got to be, which one were you using?
The Reflecto. Clark.
Or the Clark. Now, the reason for these is they're very lightweight stamped spoons. It's a very thin metal. It has very little weight to it. And you want that on about a three-foot leader from your spoon out to there. You can use 20-pound single-strand steel. I usually use 40-pound monofilm. It does a pretty good job. On the next one, you're going to be tying a bucktail jig. So we've got your line on one, your leader 3 feet back with a spoon. Now this one, I want about 18 inches to 2 feet from my swivel down to my jig. Now what the jig is going to do, it's a bucktail jig, and I'm using a 1/4 ounce, 3/8 ounce jig head with bucktail or even a curl tail on it. But that's going to hold the whole thing up where I keep it from spinning. Mm-hmm. As you reel it in, the spoon dances off the back. The jig is slightly forward and weighted enough to keep that as the bottom. If you try and put two spoons on this, it's just going to tangle all together. Mm-hmm. You have to have something heavy and something light. That's why building this rig, you cannot use a heavy spoon like a Johnson Sprite or a Gator. It's literally got to be a lightweight Reflecto or Clark spoon. We have them both at the store. When you come in, take the Clark spoon and look at it from the side. Take a Johnson Sprite, look at it from the side. The Sprite is literally 5 times thicker. It's too much weight. It won't stay out back there. So you got to have that lightweight spoon that gives you the great flash, all the stuff a spoon does, but it cannot be heavy. Otherwise, you're going to get a tremendous amount of tangles.
And that works in the Gulf or up in the harbor as well.
Speaking of stuff that works in the harbor, is tarpon fishing still working? Robert, the blind tarpon himself, what is going on with tarpon?
It's going really good, except for yesterday. You know, this whole past week.
What day were you out fishing?
I was out there on Sunday, but it always
sucks for me. It wasn't good on Sunday either.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
But there was a lot of fish around. But yesterday, two of the best tarpon fishermen I know were out there, and they struggled. Carl and one of our regulars, Rick, went out on the same boat together. And they really worked hard to find 4 fish all day and didn't catch any.
Really?
Yeah. But prior to that,
do you know what I bought from, I think it's a Blue Fox. It's like a spreader bar. And it's got 3 twisted little silver, almost like spoon. They look like fish. Think of spoons, fish shape with a twisted tail on it. There's 3 on the top, 3 on the bottom on a spreader bar. And then in the center, it's got a heavy leader on it. And I want to put something off of that, because those tarpon seem to be keying in on the glass minnows and stuff like that as the day wears on. It's really hard to get them to hook up.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I ordered that to see, A, how heavy it's made. But if it's not made heavy enough, I think we can rig it a little heavier. But I'm thinking with those double row of little spinning minnows, maybe that would entice that tarpon. Maybe put a bait buster on there or something else that might work.
Bait buster sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, something until I see it.
It's an umbrella rig.
Yeah, it's just an umbrella rig. I mean, I get it. I don't know, because, I mean, it'll be neat to see how it holds
up. The actual size of the spinners is about 3 inches. maybe just a touch less, but it, to me it was about 3 inches. With a row of those on the top, row of those on the bottom, and then you've got your main line coming out the back of it. Even casting this thing, I think you might be able to cast it, but I think it's going to be a trolling bait. But I was looking and thought, wow, school of glass minnows, tarpon keyed in on the glass minnows. I ordered one just to see it, you know what I mean? And if it looks like it'll work, I'm going to order a bunch of them.
Because I think the it's Alabama cool. rig for bass?
Well, yeah, the only problem is it's good, but they're a booger to throw, too.
They are. You need, but you can cast them.
You can cast it. And I've thought about getting those, but I'm just not sure. I like the way this looks because they literally look like glass minnows. Like, you know, the same shape as a larger anchovy.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it works out. I mean, nobody's ever been able to really pattern those fish, so why not? I mean, that should be a very good thing, you know, to try something different and see how well it works.
You start with tarpon middle of the day, or early morning. You're using live ladyfish. You got to have it. Maybe a bait buster, maybe a storm, but live ladyfish is going to wreck them.
Live ladyfish is key right now.
But then you get about middle of the day, not so much.
Yeah, they go into that slurping pattern where they start feeding on the glass minnows and the small fish fry that are out there.
So you really got mornings to get your tarpon in. By afternoon, they're aggravating. You can sit there, you're like a hole in the water, and you got tarpon blowing up literally from next to the boat to as far out as you can see. And boom, and the big back's coming out of the water, the silver thing's coming up, and you're sitting there, your heart's racing, why they ain't hitting, you ain't hitting. And after about an hour of that, this is torture. I mean, it's literally physically painful after an hour of watching these fish blow up, where you can literally, if you were quick with a stick, you could hit one with a stick that close to the boat, and they won't hit anything.
Nope. So that's what they do. Every year, it's the same story.
So I'm hoping this little silver umbrella rig may make a difference on that. I don't know.
And depending on how it goes, we might have a chance this year, but, you know, could be a couple weeks before those come in, and if we get a pretty significant front, that's going to push some of those fish out of here. So you got, I would take advantage of every moment you got. If you want to catch a tarpon, this is the prime time to give it a shot, because your time is very limited.
Now, here's a question before the class. Now, class, is there a difference between phosphorus and phosphate? Now, these words sound similar, and they could make you very edgy and nervous, because one is pretty bad in the water and the other one is not. So which one is which, class? Stay tuned. Same fish time, same fish channel. We're going to give you the answer in just a moment. But it kind of reminds me of when people say bite and bite. Now, B-I-G-H-T is like a bowline on the bite. It's the middle of a rope. It could be a marina. It could be all kinds of stuff. And then you have bite, where you just bite somebody on the ankle because you're mad at them. You know, fall down on the floor, grab them by the ankle, and bite the hell out of them. And one, but they're completely
I've won a number of bar fights that way.
I don't think like I'm going to get you for backup on the next bar fight. If you're falling on the ground, chewing on their ankles, this may or may not. It would be great for amusement factor.
It would.
I can just say this. For some reason or other, RJ, I'm picturing you. Yeah!
You guys let me know when you're about to do this, and I'll get the video going on my
phone. Oh, no videos. We had one pirate ship party where somebody took some videos, and that was the end of it. I'm confiscating all phones before parties from now on. Yeah, that's phones are suck. All right, cameras suck. I don't want evidence to be used against me. No 27 8x10 color glossy pictures with a circle and arrows and paragraph on the back of each one. Don't need it. Barnahead snappers, tarpon. The reason I'm talking about this is people see a green glow in the water. Aliens have invaded Charlotte Harbor. If you go out tonight, you're going to go out, you're going to run a stick through the water. See if the aliens are there. Star Wars in real time.
It's right? In a dark spot.
You got to be dark.
Yeah, you can't have overhead lighting around you.
Yeah, it's one of the things I actually used to do trips on it, where I would take people out up on the river and run the boat, and you can literally, where you normally see white, if you're running a boat during the day and the water comes up and you got those rolls of white coming out, the waves, it's bright green. It looks like a glow stick. And I would go up, idle along this island, and there's usually about 500 mullet next to the island. And as they dart off, it looks like you're in the middle of a Star Wars battle scene.
That's right.
With all the
tracers.
Tracers going back and forth. You've seen the phosphorus in the water.
Oh, yeah. Right? I think it's pretty cool. If you dive and fish down in the Exumas, the phosphorus there is a bright yellow, whitish color. And it really looks cool. One of the fun things to do is cannonball off the back of the boat late at night. And you get this giant, almost like an atomic explosion of phosphorus glowing all over the place. Really cool to see.
And we have it out here, too, as well, because when I was doing a lot of deep water, blue water trips for billfish, we would leave Stump Pass Marina at 3 in the morning. And as we got out and cleared the Stump Pass and headed out due west, you know, the boat looked like you were just, you had a rocket going through
yes,
the water.
Yes.
Just the prop wash and wake just made you look like you were rocket propelled.
Coming back one night, I was doing a night trip fishing, and me and my customers were coming back in, and there was so much phosphorus in the water that you could have read. The whole boat had this glow over the top. It looked like a spaceship coming across the harbor, because all the water that gets churned up makes that phosphorus glow, and literally the inside of the boat was bright enough where you could read lettering on the gauges and stuff. And I didn't have any lights on except my running lights. It was just amazing to see. Robert, you have a sneaky fishing trick with this.
Yeah. Well, and this is a phosphorescent algae. It's not really like the true phosphate or phosphorus that some people would refer to, but it's an algae that illuminates. And when it's disturbed, it creates that illumination. So as it's going through the water, if it bumps into anything, or even if they bump into each other, they'll glow. So one of the cool tricks during, you know, it always happens this time of year, September and October, right towards the end of rainy season, it shows up in good enough numbers. We used to go to Eljo Bean during snook season, and especially during opening week, and you'd walk the pier at Eljo Bean and look over the side, and you can actually see the snook sitting glowing next to the piling, so you'd know where to stop while walking out on the pier, and then we would drop a freshwater shiner down in front of them, and we'd be done in 15 or 20 minutes with our fish if we wanted to.
What you're doing is you're looking in the water. As the water hits the pilings, it has
glowing.
A green glow to it because it cavitates going around the pilings as the current picks up.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're looking just behind that and looking for another bit of cavitation there.
Sometimes the fish would actually be full
glow.
You could
see them.
Full-blown glow. Like you'd see it's a glow-in-the-dark fish right there in the water. Now, one trick that we also do sometimes when it gets bad like this when we're night fishing, take our leader off and we just fish straight main line, whether we're using braid or mono, because
as
that
thin
line,
as
the
possible.
Line knot or your leader can create a super bright glow. And you'll get less hits. So a lot of times you just tie straight to the braid or straight to the mono. Risk getting broken off more often, but it's better than no bites at all.
Well, one of the things about it, it's very, very difficult to catch fish when you have the high phosphorus counts, because your line goes out in the water and you can literally look at it all the way down. It's glowing a big green, and as the current comes across the line, it's literally a trail of bubbles and green light. And the fish just go, really? I'm not eating that. Duh, I'm not stupid.
Well, that's the time you pull out the Calcutta pole and the top water figure eight.
Oh, yeah.
And the phosphorus.
We have a few Calcutta poles in right now.
Right.
I'm going to see if we can't get enough, maybe sometime do a class on... I got to wrap those up, and I just haven't had time to put the proper wraps on them and everything.
We'll add that to your time schedule.
And all your spare time, frame.
Yeah, it's trying to get that store double-wided. We literally have twice the square footage we did before. And like I say, we've added 60 sheets of pegboard. I mean, it's a lot of stuff. And I'm tired. I'm really tired, boys and girls. Let's see. I love this going out. what you want to do is, if you're thinking about doing this, take your boat down to the ramp, put your fishing pole in the water after dark. When it's dark, swirl your fishing pole back and forth in the water and see if it glows bright green. If it, I go behind my house, I put the rod in the canal, switch it back and forth. If it glows green, I'll take the boat out. Just idling out is really cool. When I hit the river and I can fire it up, it's an amazing show. It's literally awesome. You got it. It's a great thing, and you don't have to go far from a ramp. You can't use punts because Punts Down closes at night. The only problem with Lashley is you're probably just going to go up river a little bit because it's usually a little heavier up the river. But this stuff, being an algae, floats in mats. It's kind of like red tide in a way, that it's in a bunch, and then there might not be any for quite a ways. Then you run in another patch of it. I've actually gone through. It doesn't, when we say it's here, it doesn't mean it's everywhere. It means it's in a lot of the places. People right. tend to take things absolute. Oh, it's here, so it's everywhere. Absolutely not true. You can go through, and I've had the boat light up, go dark, light up, go dark, because we're running in and out of it as we get to these patches of this algae.
Well, and if you don't have a boat, take a ride out to the beach. Go out there at night after dark and get into a darker area. And right now, a lot of the areas, the lights are turned off because of the sea turtles getting ready to hatch.
You can see it in the surf.
Like, so you'll actually see it break. Even if there's no waves, just that little minimal wave action that's right along the surf, it'll glow. And if it's really wavy, it's like sparklers going off every time it hits the sand.
What I like is when the waves are like 6 inches to a foot, because it, as it hits the shore, and then it just zips way up and down the shoreline. You know, you can watch it going all over the place. It's really cool. On a rundown, redfish everywhere. They're all over the place. Where was the bonnet sharks, real quick, Robert?
Mostly below Cape Hayes. Cape Hayes, Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, behind Boca Grande and the Intercoastal.
Snook fishing is doing good almost all around the harbor. Best bet for tarpon?
I would start at 20-foot holes and work your way out through Boca Grande Pass, especially concentrating down there.
Okay. Now, Morris Campbell is your best bet. I will tell you, he will only do 1 to 3 trips a week. It's hard to get in with Morris. If you want to get on the waiting list, give him a call at 941-276-4478. He doesn't do many trips. You can book an appointment, but you can get on the waiting list. So that's 941-276-4478. Lots of cool stuff going on. I guess that's about it. Say goodbye, Morris.
Goodbye, Morris.
Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
RJ. Wow, there's everybody here. We even got a blind tarpon and a fishing Frank. And we're going away. I bet you're glad. See you guys. Bye. Just to ease my mind. I'm going fish, 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 fish.